First of all, I want to express that I feel this is the first time we're visiting this beautiful temple and community, and we feel very, very happy to be with all of you. My name is Rama Vigraha Das, and I joined ISKCON in 1974. For the last 20-something years, I met Srila Prabhupada in Mexico in 1975. And then for 20-something years, I was in Alachua in La Florida in USA. And I saw the temple grow now in America. It's the largest temple in America with 1,500 devotees. And I saw the temple grow up from 5 devotees when I moved in to now 1,500. It's hard to know exactly how many devotees, but that's what they calculate. So I wanted to say that I feel very happy to be among all of you. And just before the class, I was thinking, when I'm sitting there, I'm gonna feel out of place. And I was thinking that maybe I should invite all of you to sit here. I think there is plenty of space, and I should sit there. But anyway, because I've been invited to speak, I will try. I told Prabhuji, now my voice is, I lost my voice when I got here. Now it's coming back a little bit. But my main idea was to go shortly over the Bhagavatam class and tell you some of the pastimes that about Srila Prabhupada that you will not see written in a book. And so that's a great treasure that I want to share with all of you. So thank you once again. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, the dynasties of the sons of Manu. Text 29. Maruta's son was Dama. Dama's son was Ragyabhardana. Ragyabhardana's son was Sudriti, and his son was Nara. The son of Nara was Kevala, and his son was Dunduman, whose son was Bhagavan. Bhagavan's son was Buddha, and Buddha's son was Trinabindu, who became the king of this earth. The best of the Apsaras, the highly qualified girl named Alambusha, accepted the similarly qualified Trinabindu as her husband. She gave birth to a few sons and a daughter known as Habila. After the great saint Vishrava, the master of mystic yoga, received absolute knowledge from his father, he begot in the womb of Ilabila the great celebrated son known as Kubera, the giver of money. Trinabindu had three sons named Vishala, Sunyabandhu, and Dumraketu. Among those three, Vishala created a dynasty and constructed a palace called Vaishali. The son of Vishala was known as Hemachandra. His son was Dumraksha, and his son was Samyama, whose son were Devaja and Krishashwa. The son of Krishashwa was Somadatta, who perform Ashwamedha sacrifices and thus satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. By worshiping the Supreme Lord, he achieved the most exalted post, a residence on the planet to which great mystic yogis are elevated. The son of Somadatta was Sumati, whose son was Janamejaya. All the kings appearing in the dynasty of Vishala properly maintained the celebrated positions of King Trinabindu. So I was thinking to give a short summary, because this is the end. I know I've been asked to go a little forward, and I will do. I just want to do a little synopsis to finish with this chapter. So it is explained on this chapter, is giving the dynasties of the son of Manu. And Srila Prabhupada explained that Vaibhasvata Manu, he had all these wonderful sons. He says that many of them, it's mentioned 10 of them specifically, they were great devotees like Maharaj Ishbaku. And then something while reading the chapter, something that I noticed is that they became very prominent because they all worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On text 30, it is also is mentioned how Kubera, the treasurer of the demigods, appeared on that dynasty in great kings like Janamejaya. But here, specifically in text 30, it is mentioned that Bhagavan was the son of Buddha, and Buddha's son was Trinabindu, who became the king of the earth. So here it's mentioned how this Bharata Varsha, this whole planet, was under the kingdom of Trinabindu Maharaj. In our days, in modern times, Bharata Varsha is, India is considered like Bharata Varsha, but at one time we understand from Vedic scriptures that the whole earth planet, it was under Vedic culture. Myself, because before joining ISKCON, I had a deep yearning for the Supreme Lord within my heart, even that I didn't know that the Lord was sitting in my heart next to me. But I was looking for that Lord for very young age. I was born a Catholic, and I was not satisfied with my religion. And so I was looking for the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, everywhere else, through books, through meditation, yoga practice, art. And you see, my country is a tiny little country south of Mexico. The name is El Salvador. Is Mexico in America, USA, Mexico, and then these tiny little countries that are in the central of America. So my country's name is El Salvador. It's a very tiny country that if you go 1 hour in one direction, you already went to the next country. You go 1 hour in the other direction, you already went through. So it's a very unimportant country. Not many people go over there because, you know, who wanna really go and visit? To some extent, it was very isolated from, you know, all the external influences. But the Lord managed to send, in 1971, one devotee from Canada. Could you imagine, from Canada, one devotee came all the way to Mexico? At that time, there was the only, in South America, the only temple was the Mexican temple. So this devotee came from Canada. He was a Swami at that time. His name was Hanuman Maharaj. And one of the amazing things that Srila Prabhupada did to encourage this Sankirtan movement, when he was 18, Srila Prabhupada gave him sannyas. And I think among all of my senior god brothers, he was the youngest one to take sannyas when he was 18. So he came to El Salvador, and I was already a vegetarian and really looking for the Lord. So on the newspaper, it was saying that this Swami, who has come all the way from Canada, is going to give a class on yoga at the yoga club, at the yoga center, and it was plain. So I read the news, and I ran to wake up my best friend. We were, you know, best friends in everything. So we had become vegetarians, and we were looking for the Lord also. So I went in, and I wake him up, and I said, look, a Swami is here, we must go. So we managed to get there, and that was my first introduction. I do remember that, what I remember very clear in my heart is that one brahmachari came. It was a Mexican brahmachari, and he said, the Swami is going to come, and he's going to lead us into mantra yoga meditation. And this mantra is the highest mantra you can meditate. And they had the mantra written in a chalkboard. And then he says, so we invite you to follow the singing. First the Swami is going to sing, and then whoever feels, they can respond to the chanting of the mantra. And so the Swami, he was looking very mystical. He came, he sat down with closed eyes. He was a very nice devotee, but he had a mystical side to him. So he sit cross-legged and he start chanting. When he start chanting, something explodes within my heart. Really, I could have never experienced the potency of the Hare Krishna mantra. And all of my being was taken. So I was going a little off of where I was trying to go. But what I was saying is that, and I will go back to tell you some stories when I met Srila Prabhupada. But one day, when Srila Prabhupada went out for the morning walk from the Mexico temple, they still have the same building in Mexico City. They still have the room that was Srila Prabhupada's room. And nearby, there is a park, a good-sized park, Chapultepec Park. So Srila Prabhupada would walk every morning with some of the disciples and some of us. I was very young, really. I think I was 19. And I still didn't understand quite the philosophy. But, you know, I'm thinking I'm a devotee. So when I saw the devotees going, mainly were the sannyas and senior devotees, somewhere or another I squeezed, you know, I went, and because I came from a different country, so they didn't know really who this guy is, so they let me just go in the middle. And so Srila Prabhupada is walking, and people in South America, by nature, is humble, like Indian people. People is very humble, and people also is very pious. So when the regular people who were walking on the street at that time, you know, most of the ladies, especially the old ladies, they were using long dress and they would cover their head like the Indian ladies do with sari. So they would see Srila Prabhupada walking, and immediately the first thought that came to mind is that he is a priest, a holy person coming, follow for all these young, you know, people, and they could feel the holiness, the greatness of Srila Prabhupada, and they would come to him and bend to their knees like Catholics do when they go, you know, to their celebrations. They will go to their knees and fold their hands in front of Srila Prabhupada, and they will say, please bless us. And Srila Prabhupada will stop and look at them, and then he asked Hridayananda Maharaj, who was the translator, he said, what are they saying? And Hridayananda Maharaj will say, Srila Prabhupada, they are asking for your blessings. And then Srila Prabhupada had, you know, his japa bag and his right hand, and he will go to their heads and touch their head and say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then when he came back to the temple, the devotees had decorated the temple in a very beautiful way, like I have seen you do here in India on festival times. There were all these garlands with flowers and fruits hanging all over the temple. And in Mexico, because, you know, there's, Mexico City is a little cold, but they also have very warm weather. So all these tropical flowers, beautiful flowers, they were bringing from the market, and they had big vases with beautiful flowers all over the temple. And so Srila Prabhupada came in, and when he saw all the decoration, he said, oh, just like in India, he says, the decoration is just like in India. And then when he was speaking Bhagavatam, that was the first Bhagavatam class that I heard, when he was speaking, he made one point. He said, I see traces of Vedic civilization in this country. So to join what we were reading, how this Maharaj was the king of the whole earth, was being ratified by Srila Prabhupada when he made that statement, I see traces of Vedic civilization and this culture. So before being a devotee, one of my pastimes was because I was thinking, maybe if I study the culture, probably you're familiar with the Mayan civilization. The Mayan civilization were there before the Aztecs. Mexico City was populated by the Aztecs, that they were like Adivasis, aborigine people from the north, not very cultured. So when we read that they were making these human sacrifices, taking the heart of people, they were doing, but they were a little barbarian. But the Mayans, they were there before everyone else. And they extended south of Mexico, what is called the Yucatan Peninsula, south to the small countries of Central America, Belize, Guatemala, Honduras, and part of El Salvador. So I'm part Mayan also. So I was thinking, if I study the roots of their culture, maybe I can understand something about the religion. And you need to understand that when the Spanish people came to conquer South America, they did very much what the Muslim people did here. They destroyed the temples of the Mayans. They burned their scriptures. Maybe they did a little bit more. They killed the Brahmanas. They killed the Kshatriyas. And then whatever was left was very easy to conquer. So that's what they did extensively. They destroyed their temples, and then wherever the Mayans had the beautiful temples, they built a Catholic church, you know, using the materials of the Mayan temples. That is what I understand very much they did also here. There was this one priest that he took the job. This was this Catholic priest, and he wrote these books. He said, I feel that all the scriptures are things of the devil, and so we must collect all of the scriptures and burn them. So that they did. They took all these books of knowledge that the Mayan people had, and they make a humongous hill. That's the description of this priest. He says it was a humongous field. They went all over the countryside. They collect all these shastras, and they make this humongous pile, and then they set them on fire. You need to understand that was 500 years ago. In Europe at that time, it was the Inquisition time. So the Catholic Church was the all-powerful church in Europe. And whatever they say, it was a king. Whatever the Pope will say, the king will do. So at that time, this priest was from that age. And then he wrote, he said, I saw the smoke and the flames, but in honor to the truth, I gotta say that I saw celestial beings coming out of the smoke on the fire and flying into the sky. That's the description of that priest. And then after all that big burning, not many scriptures from the Indians survived. One or two from the Aztecs, but they were not what I would call bona fide Vedic culture Aryan people. But the Mayans, they had the Varnashram. They followed Varnashram Dharma. And on those scriptures, from those scriptures that survived, there is one that is called Popol Vuh. And that Popol Vuh describes the pastimes of these two demigods, whose name it was Ixbalanque and Mahukuta. These two demigods, they were doing, they had all these mystic powers. And so they got all the knowledge about astrology, astronomy, how to build temples, medicine, how to worship their deities. All that knowledge was there. How they got that knowledge is explained on Popol Vuh. They say that they went across the ocean through the east. If you are in Central America, in Mexico, Central America, if you go across the ocean through the east, you will get to India. So they explain that they went across the ocean, and they went to this land where they gather all this knowledge, and they got the Brahmins, the priests, to write it down for them. So they stay on that land to learn the culture. And when they had all that knowledge on their books, they came back to their land. And then they trained the people in the knowledge of the scriptures that they got, certainly from India. So their temples, the Mayan temples, the pyramids, are there. And when myself, I went and visited them, and because I have traveled through South India, I could see the similarity between all these Mayan temples and those wonderful Vishnu temples or Shiva temples in South India. And like 4 years ago, it came on the newspaper that some people from South India, they brought astapati from South India, and they brought it to all the Mayan ruins to see all the Mayan temples. And after visiting the main cities, he stated that all those temples were Vastu compliance. He stated that all the measurements that they used to build all those pyramids were similarly the same that they used to build the temples in South India and all over India. So when I read that, that was another, you know, fact, another conclusion that this Vedic culture was at one point all over the planet. And then when you see their deities, that will blow your minds. In Copan, in Honduras, I saw this old picture, black and white, from one book, old book. And when I saw it, I said, oh, my Lord, it looks like Hanumanji. I gotta go and see him. So I went to Copan. It's close to my country. So I went to Copan, and I went to that temple. And lo and behold, Sri Hanuman is standing. You know the way Sri Hanuman usually kneels with his knee up like that? And he has his big club, you know, holding on his shoulder. And he has the big crown. And so I asked, what is the name of that deity? Remember, they kill all the Brahmins and they burn all the Shastras. So the exact knowledge is lost. But some knowledge is there. So the people say, well, he is the most famous deity of the Mayans on this city. And I say, what is his name? His name is Ik, the god of the wind. So they know Hanuman like Ik, the god of the wind. And, you know, you can see. If you see, you will see no difference. Definitely it's Lord Hanuman. So another wonderful deity that they have, it's especially, well, the original pyramid that they built is called Ras Lila. And I said, can you please repeat? And he said, Ras Lila. And I knew that they had no clue. But then the main temple is not very big. It was the original temple, and every 15 years they were building another temple and another temple until it became really big. But on the main door, wonder who he is Garuda. It's a deity of Garuda guarding the entrance to the temple. So, and then also they found, this is really far out, they found another set of two deities. They are not very big, probably like this size. And then I look at them and I say, my God, they look like Gorni Thai. Because you see, those two deities, they are standing with their hands like that. They are two. They're standing one to each other, and they are all decorated with jewels and, you know, when it looks like a turban, you know, and they're standing like this. Nobody knows who they are, really, but they were there. They found them, you know, in a temple, buried in a temple, and they are there. But there is still another far-out story that I got to tell you about deities. One lady devotee, she's a Mexican devotee. She lives in Alachua temple now. And several years back, probably 15 years, she went back to visit her relatives. They are from a little village near a very famous beach. Some of you might know it's called Acapulco. Very famous beach in Mexico on the Pacific side. So nearby, there is a little village where her family lives, and she goes and visits. And when she's visiting, she starts, you know, everyone is talking that Manolito is a Spanish name, diminutive for Manuel. So when a children, you call him Manuelito. So everyone is talking that Manuelito is coming to town. He's coming to the village. We have to make arrangements because Manolito is coming. And so she's hearing everyone talking about Manolito. She starts being a little puzzling and say, who's this Manolito? And he says, he's a saint. It's a saint that they found several years ago, like 10 years ago. Listen to this. This is the story is how you find Lord Krishna, right? He was buried in one place and then the cow came and was dripping milk right into the hole. So, but this Manolito, one person was doing something in a river, I think taking a bath, and suddenly he saw on the side of the river that from the rain of previous night, wash out some of the sand. And then he saw this beautiful, what in South America people call saint. You know, it's what the Catholics have on their church, like saints and holy people and Lord Jesus and Mary, Virgin Mary, like that. And then he went and washed it off, you know, in the river and saw this beautiful saint. And right away, he felt awe and reverence. And he brought it to the village and he said, look what I found. And so everyone said, we must, you know, do something. We must get together and do a festival for him. So they got together and they all chanting all these mantras, you know, prayers, Catholic prayers, not mantras, but some type of mantras. So they were celebrating. And then someone said, but he's so beautiful, so special. He was made of jade. You know jade? It's a green, beautiful stone that for the Mayans was sacred. So he was made out of this dark jade, very valuable. So they say, we must share it, you know, with the neighbors. And so they called the neighbor and say, we are planning to bring this saint that we found on the river to your village. And we want you to make a reception for him. We'll bring him in a palanquin, you know, like a palanquin, you know, in a palanquin. And we'll come and sing in, you know, all these songs for him. So we will bring him to your village and then you take him for a few days and you do a festival every day in someone else's house. And then you arrange with the next village for him to go. So year round, Manolito goes all over the little villages in the countryside. So Manolito is coming. So Mahatma, she decides, well, I'll bring my camera, you know, and I'll take some pictures of Manolito. Then there they come. So everyone in the town goes outside the town to receive Manolito. And then they come, you know, all the people, you know, clapping and singing, and there comes Manolito, and then she walks up front. And when she's looking at Manolito, she said, I almost faint. I got my camera, took a picture. He said, because nobody is going to believe me. And then, you know, but I used to have those two pictures. So then they brought him into a house of someone and they had decorated with flowers and fruits, an altar. They put Manolito and everyone starts singing and chanting through the night, you know. Next day, Manolito goes to the next house like that. And so she said, I gotta get a better picture because even with the picture that I have, devotees are not gonna believe me. So she goes in front of Manolito and takes a snap. Wonder who he is. It's Ladu Gopal. He is kneeling the way Ladu Gopal kneels. He has his Ladu on his hand. And he has this beautiful baby face, right? With a crown. So it's Ladu Gopal. So how Gaur Nithai, Ladu, Gopal, Hanuman, Garud, how in the world they all got there thousands of years ago? The Vedic culture, right? So this morning when we were in Mongol Arctic, I'm having a look at all of you here in Mongol Arctic, and I'm thinking, we have an expression in America, we say, oh my God, when we are impressed, you know, we say, oh my God, really all these Prabhus here, what it is an army, I was thinking. And then I was thinking, how much Srila Prabhupada will have wanting to have an army of you when he was in India before going to America, and with an army of Vaishnavas like you, he could have taken India. In no time, the same way Srila Bhaktisiddhanta took with his army of Vaishnavas. I do remember reading, and at one point, someone from the Indian independent movement came to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he asked, why don't you give me all of your young devotees? We could conquer the British. And so in the same way, I was thinking, with all these young, nice-looking Vaishnavas, all educated, nice preachers, oh, Srila Prabhupada could have taken India in no time. The way he took over the Western countries, not exactly with an army of Vaishnavas, but how he lovingly used to call us an army of monkeys. I'm not a white monkey, but most of my God brothers in America and Europe look very much like a white monkey. And so to tell you that the first devotee that I met, his name was Hanuman, and he really looked like a white monkey. But in all the sense of the word, even Srila Prabhupada told him at the moment of initiation, he says, he called his non-devotee name, come forward, and he's giving the japa mala, and he says, you really look like Hanuman. Because he has, you know, all white blue eyes, but he has this big monkey face, white monkey face. So in February 1975, Srila Prabhupada came to Mexico for the second time. The first visit of Srila Prabhupada, if I'm going over the time, please let me know. I was thinking that I was just going to take 5 or 10 minutes. But you let me know. So Srila Prabhupada, the first time he went to Mexico, the temple was full of devotees. But everything was not very well organized. So Srila Prabhupada came to the airport. He had no servants. He came alone to the airport. And then he comes out of, you know, he comes to immigration. Usually devotees will greet him at immigration. Someone will squeeze in. There was nobody around. And then he's thinking, oh, maybe when I get to the lobby, to the waiting lobby, devotees are going to be there. So Srila Prabhupada goes there, and there's nobody there, you know. And so he's wondering, well, what happened, you know? What happened with my disciples? And then an hour go by, and there's, you know, he doesn't have the phone number for the Mexican temple. Like when I got here, I got one day late, and I didn't have your phone number to call the temple. So Srila Prabhupada is there, and he's tired, so he sits in his luggage, you know, on his luggage, piece of luggage he's sitting, you know, a little upset after 1 hour. And then just by Krishna's arrangement, one lawyer who happened to visit the temple, and like the devotees, he was dropping someone else at the airport, and suddenly he sees Srila Prabhupada. He has only seen him picture, and he said, oh my God, this is Srila Prabhupada. I'll go and talk with him. So he goes, Jai Srila Prabhupada, are you Srila Prabhupada? And Srila Prabhupada says, yes, I am. He says, so what are you doing? He said, I'm waiting for my disciples, and I don't know where they are. So he said, if you want, I can take you, Srila Prabhupada. He said, you better take me, because, you know, I don't want to wait anymore. So he takes the devotees. So the time he is going to the temples, all the devotees are coming late, you know, flying in the opposite direction, right? So Srila Prabhupada gets to the temple, wonder there's no one to be seen. Because all the devotees are flying to the airport. And so there is only two or three devotees left. But something happened, so they were waiting Srila Prabhupada a little later. And suddenly Nanda Mataji, she's an American disciple. She lives in Alacho Temple now. And so Srila Prabhupada came, right? And there's two doors. The main door goes to the temple. The second door goes to the kitchen. So devotees were not expecting him. And he came in, and the kitchen was a little dirty. There was nobody around, only one matai like that. And so someone escort Srila Prabhupada to his room, you know. So by 1975, Hridayananda Maharaj, he was the new GVC for South America. And he wanna really give a very good impression to Srila Prabhupada that this time the temple was running a little different, everything was well organized, and that whatever happened in the previous visit was not going to happen. So they had rehearsals, you know. They had rehearsals. Everyone will come up. You line up like this. You play the mridanga. You play the kartal. You do the kirtan. And then they had this other devotee. His name is Ishopanishad. He was a bhakta back then. He had a big conch shell. So he was going to be in guard on top of the temple. It looks like a little Vedic temple or something. It was the embassy of one Muslim country before the devotees bought it. So it was looking nice, oriental type. And there was this, like, chhatri, you know. And so he had the big conch shell. So he blew up the conch shell. Everyone ran, gave obeisance, started the kirtan. They practiced so many times, right? So, you know, but last minute, everyone is running inside the temple. But this time, Hridayananda Maharaj is waiting at the airport. He has a few devotees, you know, and big garland, nice garlands they offer to Srila Prabhupada. They have police escort, like sometimes you get here in India, you know, with the police motorcycles, you know, and siren blowing, you know. They made arrangements. Srila Prabhupada didn't need to stop by custom or immigration. They wave him through, you know, they sit him and garland him, and okay, Prabhupada, we're ready to go. Everything is working really nice, right? And then the police car and Srila Prabhupada say, oh, I like this escort. It's very nice. Nice car. They are going to the temple, right? And then they get to the temple. And the guard, Upanishad, is out there, right, with his big conch shell. And then he gets so excited that he starts jumping up and down. Jai!
Haribol, Prabhupada, and he forget to blow the conch shell, right? And then Hridayananda is behind, you know, and Srutakirti, Paramahansa Swami, are coming out with Srila Prabhupada. And once again, there's two doors, same building, same temple, right? One door goes to the temple, the other goes to the kitchen. And then because there's nobody to escort Srila Prabhupada goes into the first door, that is the kitchen door. And so Nanda Matai is finishing cooking. And then through the window, she sees Srila Prabhupada coming through the kitchen instead of going to the temple room. And she's sweeping, you know, all the mess after cooking, a big offering. She's sweeping and he has all this garbage, you know, with a big broom. And then she says, what am I going to do? He's coming this way and he's going to open the door. The door will open to the inside, right? He will open the door and he will see all this trash. What I'm going to do? So she said, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to put all this trash behind the door. So when he opens the door, right, the old doors opens to the inside, he's not going to see the trash. And so, you know, she puts all the trash in, lo and behold, when Srila Prabhupada comes, he opens the door, right? And so she said, Jai Srila Prabhupada, 2-3 devotees in the kitchen, they throw, you know, dandavas, pranam, and Srila Prabhupada is looking and wonder what's the first thing Srila Prabhupada does. He opens the doors and look and he says, what is this? And they're, ah! So Hridayananda Maharaj comes, court him, you know, take him to his room, a very nice room, very nice facility. And so Hridayananda Maharaj is explaining how the devotees are making this humongous book distribution, so many books every day, and they go all over the countryside and they are printing so many new books. And so Srila Prabhupada, you know, he's pleased to hear his book being printed and distributed in Spanish language. And then, but the first time Srila Prabhupada went to Mexico, the first thing he asked, he said, I want to taste the Mahaprasad that is being offered to the deities. So from the deities plate, I want to try. So he tried, and the cooks were not very good. Mexican cooks back then, not very good. So Srila Prabhupada chastised the previous temple president. He says, no, deity worship, like I eat prasad that is offered him and some of the Mahaprasad, and everything is such a high class, delicious prasad. But back then, you know, we're all new devotees. We're not trained, you know, as cooks, so it was a little not very nice. So Srila Prabhupada gets to his room, and first thing he says, I want to taste, he says, the Mahaprasad. And so the devotees go, and they bring the Mahaprasad, and he tastes Mahaprasad. And Mahaprasad, once again, was not very good quality. And Srila Prabhupada starts chastising the GVC and the temple president and the cooks. He said, book distribution, he said, pleases my heart very much. But deity worship should have very high standard. So he said, they should go at the same level. Not that you do big distribution and you neglect the deities, or that you have big deity worship and you neglect book distribution. So like this, I gotta tell you this story that it happened. Srila Prabhupada arrived in the morning. We were coming from probably 1,000 kilometers from my country, the distance. So we got a little late. So the first time I saw Srila Prabhupada was in the evening for Bhagavad Gita class. And his room was in the second floor. So let's say Srila Prabhupada Vyasa-sang is here. Then his room on the second floor was where Prabhuji is standing there. And he will come around and then come down the stairs, you know, the big staircase coming down, and he will come and sit on his vyasasan. So we were having this humongous kirtan, humongous kirtan. We were screaming like mad guys, you know, really, you know, so enthusiastic because Srila Prabhupada was there. So Srila Prabhupada is coming and he walks around. So everyone, oh, Srila Prabhupada is there. Srila Prabhupada is there. And so he comes to the top of the stairs and he takes his garlands and start plucking some of the flowers and throwing it to us, right? Oh, we really went nuts. We were jumping and, you know, grabbing the flowers like little kids, right? And but that impression that Srila Prabhupada, I want to share with you, because that impression has been with me for over 36 years. He was standing on top of the stairs, ready to come down. And I was looking at him. And in my heart, I knew 100% Paramatma was telling me, he is your spiritual master. So at that moment, in my heart, I had not a single doubt that Srila Prabhupada was my spiritual master. And I'm a little emotional. So when I saw Srila Prabhupada first, tears were falling from my eyes. And he started coming down the steps. But then I see that he is not really walking. Like when we go up the steps, right? We go down one step, then the other like this. I'm seeing that Srila Prabhupada is like floating down the steps. But of course, my tears, there's tears in my eyes. And I'm trying, you know, to see, because I say, whoa, you know, this is something really mystical, how Srila Prabhupada is not touching the ground. He's just going down, going down. And, you know, that's my memory. But, of course, then the mind comes in. Probably, you know, like, I never told that story to anybody until recently in Alachua, a few years ago. Because in one way I was thinking, if I tell, nobody's gonna believe me. Or some other devotees might say that I was imagining. And I had my own doubts, you know, because my mind was saying, well, you know, maybe you were just, you know, speculating or something. So I kept it in my heart for many years. But you have to know that in Alachua, there is over 200 Prabhupada disciples. So we decide, and festivals are really nice, really, really nice. We put so much effort into making big, big festivals. And of course, for you here in India, you know, our big festivals in Alachua will be, you know, tiny. Like in Janmashtami, you get so many thousands of people. Over there, they get 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 probably, and, you know, it's the biggest festival in America. But so we were saying we will have this Janmashtami and then let's make a bigger festival for Srila Prabhupada. For Srila Prabhupada appearance day, we should make this year a big, big festival. So we had a committee festival, and we got together, and we were asking for ideas, you know. And then maybe some of you know Bhadra Prabhu. Bhadra Prabhu, he's an Indian devotee. He does the Braja Mandal Parikram every year. So he gives the idea. He said, let's have a 5 days festival for Srila Prabhupada. And so that maybe on the first day, whoever met Srila Prabhupada in this country, the devotees speak and like this. So we plan it like that. So we start 4 days before the festival in the evening time. And because so many Prabhupada disciples, we decide the first day, whoever met Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles Temple, when Srila Prabhupada visited many times in Los Angeles Temple, those devotees are going to speak pastimes that they realizations about Srila Prabhupada when he visited Los Angeles Temple. So that was the first day. The second day, whoever met Srila Prabhupada in New York. So many devotees met Srila Prabhupada in New York. So on the second day, they were telling all these pastimes of Srila Prabhupada in New York. On the third day, whoever met Srila Prabhupada in India, many American devotees, some Indian devotees also, they told all these stories of Srila Prabhupada. And then on the fourth day, whoever met Srila Prabhupada any part of the world will tell stories. Oh, many devotees, you know, from everywhere, South America, everywhere, so many countries. And on the fifth day, we will have like two tables the size of these asanas. And whoever had a Mahaprasada, paraphernalia from Srila Prabhupada will bring so that everyone can see and will tell the story, how they got it, how Srila Prabhupada used it, like that. So, you know, we fill up those big tables, and there was slippers from Srila Prabhupada that he used in India. We blankets, the last blanket that Srila Prabhupada used on the day he left his body in Vrindavan, the cup that he was using to drink his medicine, books, you know, signed by Srila Prabhupada, kurtas, dhotis, oh, canes, you know, so many things, so many paraphernalia, and devotees were telling these stories. So we got to hear many of those stories that are not written on the books. And I want to tell you some of those stories. There is this devotee, his name is Kapila. He said that he was with Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan. So he was a book distributor for many years, and he didn't have much association with Srila Prabhupada, but happened to come to Vrindavan. And he said, I was making sure that I was always next to Srila Prabhupada. When he came to see Krishna Balaram, I was next to him. So he will offer his obeisances, and I will make sure that I was always very close to his lotus feet. And he said, so I was always looking his lotus feet. And, you know, at least 10 days in a row, he was laying down, and he said, but in my mind, I was really debating, I want to touch his lotus feet. Should I touch his lotus feet? You know, and every day he's thinking, today, I'm going to touch his feet. But he said there was something in his heart saying, no, should not do it. But then he said on the last day, he said, this is my last opportunity. Maybe I don't have another opportunity. So today, whatever it happened, I'm going to touch his lotus feet. And then there goes Srila Prabhupada, offer obeisances. And he's just lifting his hand to touch Srila Prabhupada's feet. And another devotee is faster than him. And touch Srila Prabhupada's feet, you know, touch it and go to his head. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, turns around and he says, don't ever touch my feet in front of the deities. And so Kapila says that he was thinking, oh my God, I was saved, you know, for half a second. Another story is that they had this special program in Calcutta near the place where Srila Prabhupada grew up. And so many members of Srila Prabhupada's family came also. And so Srila Prabhupada was introducing the most prominent family members. And he is this, and he is my cousin, and he's, you know, in India, extended family. So Srila Prabhupada is presenting everyone. But of course, the main purpose of Srila Prabhupada was to present Krishna consciousness, right? And so while he's presenting everybody, he presents, you know, causing over causing, something like this. And then the Indian gentleman, he just take over. He just comes and he say, Srila Prabhupada, I got to tell you that I have a very big problem and I have no solution for that problem. And so today I'm speaking to you and I really need to tell you. And so Srila Prabhupada said, what is it? He said, I need to marry my daughter and I don't have money to marry my daughter. But then the gentleman keep on going for almost 20, 25 minutes saying how he needed to marry his daughter and he needed the money and that he was suffering because his daughter and the devotees, especially the devotee who told the story, he said he could see that Srila Prabhupada was getting a little impatient, being very polite, but getting a little impatient because this gentleman will not stop and will keep on going and going and going and going. And you see, at that time, you know, most of the American devotees, they were all brahmacharis. So they are all sitting to Srila Prabhupada's feet. And then Srila Prabhupada said, okay. He said, I'll give you the solution to your problem. I'll marry your daughter to this brahmachari. And the brahmachari is thinking, but I am a brahmachari. And Srila Prabhupada, and he was thinking, oh my God, what I'm going to do? I don't, you know, for an American, you tell him you're going to marry this, you know, doesn't work like that. You know, it's you blew his mind. And he said, yeah, I know Srila Prabhupada is my guru, but I want to be a brahmachari. And, you know, I don't even know how the girl looks like, how in the world I'm gonna marry that girl. He said, I was changing color from purple to white and red, you know, and I could not say nothing. And then Srila Prabhupada started giving the class, you know, preaching about Krishna consciousness. And he is feeling, he said, like this, you know, in front of everyone. And trying to debate what is going to happen with me. But I want to be a brahmachari. And I, you know, I'm into book distribution. And so 4 days goes by. And he didn't hear, you know. He's not hearing nothing from Srila Prabhupada. His mind is giving him so much problems, you know. He's thinking, should I dress in white? What I should do? You know, he decides, I'm going to go and speak with Srila Prabhupada. I'm going to tell him that I'm a brahmachari, that I want to do book distribution. And so he goes inside. He asks the servant permission to sit. He wants to speak to Srila Prabhupada, and he goes in. But, you know, what we experience with Srila Prabhupada is that you might think, oh, I have this question myself. You know, I was thinking now after class when he called for questions, I'm going to ask a couple of questions, you know. And then I'm sitting there in front of Srila Prabhupada and my brain went dull, you know, white, you know, void, you know. And I could not remember anything. And so this devotee, the same thing happened. I mean, he knew what he wanted to ask. But he was afraid to tell Srila Prabhupada how I'm going to tell Srila Prabhupada that I don't want to get married to that girl, that girl is in his family. You know, how I'm going to brought it up and what I'm going to do. And he's sitting there. And Srila Prabhupada is talking to different people, you know. And suddenly, he just turned to him and said, by the way, you're not marrying that girl because the family doesn't want the girl to marry an American. So don't worry. And so, you know, Srila Prabhupada, that was another thing. Srila Prabhupada could read the mind of all of us. Going back to my story, when I saw Srila Prabhupada gliding down the steps, when we had all these devotees telling stories, many devotees, at least 3 or 4 devotees, came with the same story that at different times, they saw Srila Prabhupada not walking on the ground, but really like levitating and walking on top of the ground, either on flat land or coming down the stairs. And that's when I realized, I said, then I was right, right? And that was the first time that I told that story. And now, wherever I go, I tell the devotees, because that was one of the, you know, mystic sides of Srila Prabhupada. The other mystic side of Srila Prabhupada that some devotees saw is that suddenly Srila Prabhupada started glowing, you know, like a sun, glowing, glowing, and then you could not see Vyasakim Prabhu, he tells the story in his book. And some of you might know, but he said that it was the same thing. It was not very easy in the later years. Was not very easy to go and see Srila Prabhupada. So he figured out that the place where Srila Prabhupada was staying at that temple, it had a big window that you can see from a garden. So he said, if I go to the garden, I can see Srila Prabhupada. Because many disciples like us, for us, just a glance from Srila Prabhupada was the greatest treasure. So just to see Srila Prabhupada, even if we didn't spoke directly to him or talk to him, just to have a glance to Srila Prabhupada was the greatest treasure. So he went in the evening when nobody could tell him, and he was staying behind the bushes, and he was looking Srila Prabhupada, right? So he told his best friend, he said, hey, let's go and see Srila Prabhupada. No, I found this place. We go around the bush. Nobody's going to see. So they went. And when they are looking at Srila Prabhupada, he said Srila Prabhupada was writing on his desk. You know, all this light came from Srila Prabhupada. And then they look at each other and say, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And they say, you mean the light? Yes. So, you know, that light was emanating from Srila Prabhupada, and many devotees said it was very hard to see him. You could see all these lights. And then just now that we were, before coming here, we stopped in Alachua for Janmastami and Vyas Push, and I was telling another Prabhupada disciple, and she told the same story. She said, well, I also saw it. She said, the light. She said, it happened when Srila Prabhupada came to London. You know, you read on Satsarup Maharaj's biography how Srila Prabhupada was dancing all the way in Ratha Yatra. And he said that at one point, some police men, two policemen, came running to one devotee who was in charge of the parade. And she happened to be next to him. And the devotee said, hey, look at him. Look all this, you know, light coming out of him. What is it? What is it? So even the policemen, you know, were able to see all that glow coming from Srila Prabhupada. And another time, I can tell you also funny stories of Srila Prabhupada. One day in Mexico, he was going out for his... would you mind to move this aside? My legs are... I need to stretch my leg a little bit. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada was going out for the morning walk, and that day they allowed the Sankirtan devotees, the brahmacharis, to come along to have the association of Srila Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada is walking, and then probably all of you know that Srila Prabhupada used... Should I stop? So, Srila Prabhupada would use the neem twigs, right, to brush his teeth. But when he went for extended periods to America, he would use twigs from one big tree that you also have here in India, eucalyptus tree. So, there is this humongous eucalyptus tree when you get into the park. And Srila Prabhupada stops and look to one branch, probably as high as the ceiling here. And then he tells Hridayananda Maharaj, he says, I want that twig. So Hridayananda Maharaj, he is all fired up. And he says, brahmacharis, and everyone comes running. He says, Srila Prabhupada want that little twig. And he said, but how are we going to get? You figure out how you going to get out. Either you get the ladder or whatever, you get it. And then they say, okay, let's do a pyramid, right? And many brahmacharis get around. A second layer goes on the shoulder, you know, and then you send one guy, you know, to get it. And so they are almost getting it, right? Almost getting it. And then the devotee just need to reach a little bit more. And when he reached, he lose control and fails, and everyone falls to the ground, right? So Srila Prabhupada is laughing. Srila Prabhupada is having a great time seeing his disciples, you know, struggling to get that little twig. So Hridayananda Maharaj, once again, shame on you, come on, guys. You know, and so Brahmachari young guys, and they all get in, you know, second time, second attempt. And yes, they send the same devotee. He's just reaching, almost reaching, and he fell off, and everyone falls to the ground for the second time, right? And then Hridayananda Maharaj said, you guys, send the skinny guy. Who's the skinny guy? Send him on top so he doesn't fail. So the third time, right, they go up. They send the skinny devotee, and he goes, and he reached the little twig, right? And then they bring it and give it to Hridayananda Maharaj. And Hridayananda Maharaj, very proudly, you know, it took like good 15, 20 minutes to get the little twig. So presented to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada inspect the twig for 1 or 2 seconds and throw it away and keep on walking. So this is another funny story. There is another devotee who lives in Alachua. His name is Balavanta Prabhu. Some of you might know him from Srila Prabhupada pastimes. He was the first temple president from the Atlanta Temple in Atlanta, Georgia, in U.S. And also he was one of the first GVCs named by Srila Prabhupada. So he says that 1975, he went all the way from Atlanta. They were going to celebrate the Vyas Puja of Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles Temple for the first time. And Srila Prabhupada wanted all of his temple president and leaders and senior devotees to be there. So, you know, the temple room is full of devotees. And it's Guru Puja time. And then Balavanta Prabhu is visiting, you know, and it's packed. You know, it's packed. There's not much room. And so suddenly, one devotee come with this beautiful, beautiful long garland. You know, all roses and gardenias, you know, beautiful, beautiful garland. And that was the garland that they were going to offer to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada comes, sits on the Vyasasan. And so this devotee comes and gives the garland to Balavanta Prabhu. I hope he doesn't mind that I'm using his name, because he tells the story to everybody. And then Balavanta Prabhu is looking to this beautiful, humongous garland. And he said that he sings, these devotees are so nice. And he put it on. And everyone goes, ah, in the temple room. You know, everyone was like, oh my God. And then he realized that that was the garland for Srila Prabhupada. You know, and he takes it out. He said, no, now we cannot give to Srila Prabhupada. And then the temple president said, you know, go and find someone else, you know, to make a garland. They run the devotee. The devotee runs back. There's no more flowers for another garland. Oh, my God. And everyone is waiting, you know. Everyone is waiting for the Guru Puja to start. And then Balavanta Prabhu is feeling so bad. He said, oh my God, in front of my God brothers, in front of my God sisters, you know, I really blew it. I was feeling like the full number one in front of Srila Prabhupada. So suddenly someone managed a little garland and they put it on Srila Prabhupada and everything went on, right? So very successful. So next year, Srila Prabhupada send a letter. He wants all of his senior devotees, temple president, GVCs, to be for his Vyas Puja in Los Angeles once again. Everyone should go there. So the temple is full of devotees. right? And Srila Prabhupada comes in, he sits in the vyasas, and they are all ready to start. And one devotee comes with this beautiful garland, beautiful, beautiful garland for Srila Prabhupada. And then, you know, they give it to, wonder who? Balavanta Prabhu, right? Once again. And Balavanta Prabhu, he's talking to someone else, and then he sees the garland and he says, oh, these devotees are so nice. And he put it on and he wants it. And everyone said, oh, no, once again? So this is another very funny story. I can tell you another story. So I'm late, but thank you very much for all of you to listen patiently. Like I said, this is my first time I came to visit, and I feel great appreciation for the work you're doing on behalf of Srila Prabhupada and Radhanand Maharaj. And I think we'll be neighbors because we're moving to Roja, where Lavanga Latika Matai has her little project. So we're neighbors, and from time to time we'll see each other. If you let me come and see you. Glories to Srila Prabhupada.